you. Hi, I'm Dave Melarsh, and I'm from Electric Six, and you're listening to the Turbo Jugend Radio. Hi, I'm Dave Melarsh from Electric Six, and you're listening to Turbo Jugend Radio. I'm Dave Melarsh, and you're listening to Turbo Jugend Radio. Hi, I'm Dave Melarsh from Electric Six, and you're listening to Turbo Jugend Radio.
So hello everybody, welcome back to another episode of Turbo Jugend Radio, and this one again took me down under. I'm again in Australia, and with me at this time is Don Cactas from Turbo Jugend Wasteland. Did I say that right? Did I got it finally right?
Nailed it. Yeah, nailed it. Very good.
Thank you. So I decided to call Australia again because of another recently put out well-designed, nice MVP type of most valuable patch type of a patch. It is a fundraiser patch. And as I understand, you were behind the design of the patch. Maybe you can elaborate on this and talk a little bit about what is about this patch and what makes it special and why does it actually exist. But welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I did the artwork for the patch, but definitely Jan V, El Comandante had a lot to do with organizing it. But basically, we wanted to do a fundraiser for the bushfires that happened here pretty much at the start of the year. I think it was 1 billion animals died in those fires, and I think it was 12 million. Hectares, I think, was how much burnt. Yeah. So we wanted to get some money together to basically assist with mainly the wildlife. I think the majority of the money raised was going towards wildlife, basically rescuers, but like rural fire services as well. So okay. That was the idea behind it.
So, but I've seen pictures of it and it looks amazing. Maybe you can give a brief description of what's actually on the patch and what.
Yeah. I've got one here.
Oh yeah, that's.
There we go.
That's cool.
My background's Koori Nation. It's a patch with a very distinctive Aboriginal Australian vibe to it. The essence of it is the Banksia. Banksia is a flower in Australia that it needs fire basically to sow its seeds. Their seed pods are kind of like fused closed until fire passes through and then it'll open up and scatter
its seeds. So it's a flower that actually can survive a fire?
Yeah, absolutely. It needs fire. Aboriginal Australians have been on the land for so long, like over 60,000 years. It's the landscape in Australia is geared towards how Aboriginal people use land. So fire is a big part of hunting, but also land control. So a lot of native flora and fauna in Australia needs fire to reproduce. So that was the essence to it. Like Banksia is a beautiful flower anyway. It's a very distinct flower. But that was the main idea behind it, was that, you know, it's a flower that grows from fire.
Okay, so as I understand, fire plays a big role in the Aborigine culture. You were mentioning hunting. Is it a way of get animals to go to a certain place and then be able to hunt them better? Is that the basic idea?
Is it that is definitely part of it. You would use fire to flush out animals to hunt, but It often gets forgotten that, I don't know if your viewers would particularly know about it, but Aboriginals are often sort of like thought of as nomads, like wandering around. Mm-hmm. But they were farmers as well. And it was a form of land clearing, keeping pests down, reinvigorating the soil. So it has multi sort of like uses for Indigenous Australians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about hunting, but like it is, fire obviously is super important in culture.
And if you look at the patch, it's basically the flower on it, and it's surrounded by flames, if I'm getting that right?
Yeah. Yep. Well, the waving lines, a lot of Indigenous Australian symbols are quite simple in essence, but they also have multiple meanings. The waving lines often represent fire and smoke. Mm-hmm. And that's what they represent in this patch. But like lightning as well, which is, you know, a natural way of sort of obtaining and obtaining fire, but also like, you know, it's all interconnected in essence.
Okay. So it's an awesome patch you made. It's lots of colors on it, and it's obviously, as you mentioned, has ties to the bushfires at the start of the year with devastating effects and results.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you came up with this patch, and you are, as I understand, you're trying to raise money with it.
Yes.
For the wildfire fighters, or also for what is going to be done with the money collected? Is it preventive or for future fires, or is it also trying to build up?
There's a lot of money that's been sort of like set aside. Like obviously there was a lot of people donating money to Australia at the time. A lot of that money has been put away to future kind of events, but the majority of what this patch went towards or is going towards is the wildlife rescue, essentially. So animals that were hurt and injured during the fires. I think I mentioned before, I think it was 1 billion animals that were wiped out. So the surviving animals, kind of recuperating them, that to my understanding is where the majority of the money is going.
Okay, so you guys in Australia, you guys came up with the idea of having a patch and trading it, or probably sending it all over the planet to get some. You're selling them basically to get the money back and to donate it, which is a very, really nice and sensible thing to do, basically, because you know I understand Turbigan is a punk rock beer drinking club, and we like to drink and party. But also we have, as a micro-society, we have a certain sense of responsibility to do good things in life. And this is obviously one of them.
I believe so. Yeah, absolutely.
So when did you guys start producing those patches? And are you going to be continuously producing them as people are wanting to donate and get the patch for it?
You would probably have to speak to Jan directly about that. But... my understanding is that it is standalone. It is what it is. I think there are some patches still available, but I think the idea was that it was a limited run, and that people that donated at the time would get this patch. I couldn't tell you whether there's any aims to do it again or do it ongoing, but my understanding of it the moment is that there's a couple still left, and I think if you can manage to get in contact with El Comandante, you can probably still get a couple, but I feel like the majority of them are gone. That's not to say that we can't do something similar again.
Okay, but it's a really good idea, and I think it's a wonderful patch that reminds me of those, I don't know, to begin. Tokyo seemingly has always really nice patches as far as
they are amazing patches. Yeah. With the Australasian meeting that we had just before the coronavirus kind of lockdown, we had a meetup down here. Yeah, and those batches are always gorgeous.
Is Emily, I don't know if it's Amy doing it or from Too Big
to I'm not sure he's doing it, but whoever's doing it, it's nailing it.
And this is sort of like the same class of patches, which is a...
Well, thank you.
It is the Champions League of patches we're looking at. This is why I put your the patch on the podcast, besides the very good reason of collecting money for animal in Australia, which is...
It's very good company. If you can compare me to Tokyo's patches, very good company.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I understand, you are a tattoo artist, so you are familiar with drawing and being able to get your ideas on a piece of paper, which I obviously can never
draw.
I draw like a four-year-old, and it's never going to change. But it's very, very
the only thing I can do. Thank you.
It's a super, it's a really good thing if you are able to really be creative in that way. You know, I couldn't do it. I can't do anything with I can do some things with my hands, which I'm not going to be getting into. It's not interesting, by the way.
That's a whole different podcast, right?
It's stuff that little dachshunds also can do. So it's nothing special, I guess. So, but this is obviously a really good craft. You're familiar with, but as I understand, you were going into this Aborigine thing, kind of in a detail, which is makes me wonder what are your ties to the Aborigine culture?
So I am fair skinned Aboriginal. The main reason for that is my grandmother is part of what we call here the Stolen Generation. Which was Aboriginal children basically being removed from their families as a way of getting rid of Aboriginal people. They used to say breeding out the black. So my grandmother actually unfortunately passed away before she knew where she came from, which is quite common. For the Aboriginal community here, it's rare for you not to know someone that is part of the Stolen Generation. So my connection is kind of rural New South Wales, which is basically where my grandmother was from, was Wanneroo and Dalkinjung nations, which is just like north, straight north, kind of rural from Sydney in New South Wales. That's where I'm from.
Okay. And how far are you from Tubing Wasteland, which is a part of Melbourne, I understand? It's a suburb?
Yeah, well, Wasteland's northern suburbs of Melbourne. But the reason we got Wasteland together, it's parallel to Melbourne. We're still closely affiliated with Turbo Yugen Melbourne. But we had a lot of international people with us. And we wanted to be sort of like still together with our, you know, kuta. So we put together Wasteland. It's almost a tribute to sort of Mad Max sort of vibes, I guess, as well. But that's led on to people in California with the Wasteland Festival. We've got members in there. We have members all over the world, in fact. But the core group of us is essentially northern suburbs of Melbourne.
But how come it's called Wasteland? Is that the name
of a
district in Melbourne called Wasteland?
No, it's kind of like Northland. Wasteland is really kind of a reference to Mad Max, essentially.
Okay.
Nowhere land, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's like people from all over. But Mad Max, the original sort of movies, were sort of filmed around northern suburbs of Melbourne and Victoria. So it's kind of references that. We still, again, have close sort of ties to Melbourne, in particular Melbourne Turbo mm-hmm. Union. Yeah, it's kind of like a little sort of like funny nowhere nomad kind of group.
So going back to the Aborigine discussion, so you're, as I understand, your grandma, you have family roots in this culture. In how far does it play a role in your current everyday life? Is that still are some things you are doing or some references you are taking?
My experience of it's going to be uniquely mine, I guess. I can't really speak for anyone else that's fair-skinned Indigenous, but every day, a lot of activism for me is so important because Indigenous Australians are still suffer a lot. We have one of the highest mortality rates in Australia. One of the highest incarceration rates in Australia. So part of me reconnecting to my grandmother and my grandmother's people is making sure that as a fair-skinned Indigenous person, I do that work. Because there's a lot of privilege that comes from being fair-skinned. A lot of the racism towards Indigenous Australians, I grew up not having to deal with.
As you're mentioning fair-skinned, just to get for the audience, fair-skinned, yeah. You mean a whiter skin or just a regular European type of skin? European, I don't know. Word? Is it Caucasian? Is it Caucasian?
It's a complicated subject, but within Indigenous Australia, there's a wide range of skin colours, skin tones. When I refer to myself as fair-skinned Indigenous, it's a way of me acknowledging the privileges I have. The essentially passing is white. So I still have a strong connection to Indigenous culture, mm-hmm. but I don't suffer in the same way that Black Indigenous people suffer in this country. So when I refer to myself as fair-skinned Aboriginal or Indigenous, it's a way for me to acknowledge that that's my identity, but I am also acknowledging that I don't suffer in the same ways that Black Indigenous people do.
So in a brief look on history, how did this start, and what is the historical background on the suffering of the Aborigine culture? is it again colonial related stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Terra Nullius, I guess it's going to be a long podcast.
Oh yeah, just briefly, because the audience might not be familiar with. Of course, we sometimes on the podcast we deal with racism, and we always come back to the this German thing, and this is American black white thing. But this is another aspect of it, and I would like to always use the podcast to get people smarten up a little bit on the cultural aspect. So. If you just a quick dive into the history,
I'll try and be
as long as you want to, basically.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Colonialism in Australia was pretty savage towards the Indigenous people, as it usually is towards Indigenous people. There's a long history of massacres in Australia. I mentioned before the Stolen Generation, that was a very deliberate attempt to remove Black people from an Australian profile.
When was that? When did this happen? What are we talking about, 100 years ago, 200 years ago?
So you're talking around about 200 years since sort of colonization of Australia. That sort of time frame. And it began straight away. There were massacres straight away. There's the frontier wars, which is often kind of, it wasn't something I was taught in school. I'm basically self-educated about the frontier wars. The Aboriginal people put up resistance to colonization. But the history of Australia that's taught in schools is essentially terra nullius, which is that it was not an inhabited continent, that there was no one here, there was no civilization here. So from the very start of colonization in Australia, Indigenous people were treated as animals. Flora and fauna, they were considered right up until the 60s, I think. I think, 1960s, there were still dog licenses issued to Indigenous children in the Northern Territory. So it's something that's still very recent in a lot of respects. You might talk about it like a 200-year period, but, there was still that sort of level of racism in Australia until the 60s, and it still permeates culture. There's still a lot of backlash at just acknowledging an Indigenous history in Australia.
So there's a certain movement of keeping the truth kind of down and like
talk. Absolutely.
So they try to hide it from the young people, so they don't grasp a whole realistic historic picture.
There is change. There's always change.
That's what I was about to ask. Is there any, since some aspects of our world, the Western world, have changed to the better? I'm not talking about everything, but seemingly that. To the Western culture, the white cultures seemingly grasping more, like accepting all other cultures. I mean, I'm not talking about some Eastern German dorks or some freaks, but the majority of the world seems to be more open-minded.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think there's a movement towards people being more closed down, if anything. The funny thing about progress is it doesn't stop for anything. You know, progress is progress, and it's slowly inches forward, and that's inevitable. But I feel right now that if anything, as much as we creep forward, there's always going to be backlash against that. Against acknowledging sort of like Indigenous histories, acknowledging how we treat minorities. We slowly get better eventually. That's my thoughts anyway.
Yeah, I mean, step-wise, right? Small steps. Yeah. The good thing about the Tube Jung, and maybe also closing out the conversation, is that we consider ourselves, and it's always very important, and I would always want to stress this on a podcast, it should be a very open-minded, good-minded, also, not only towards human beings, obviously, no matter what race, but which we are, and we will, every single one of us in the Jungian is kind of obliged.
That's the thing about the Jungian, isn't it?
Yes. That's the number one thing. It's a unity and music and rock and roll and maybe some beers and stuff.
Maybe
pizza,
maybe
also pineapple pizza and whatnot. We all like and love. This is the most important thing, and we should never. And we have to look out for each other and really keep a close eye on all the cultural aspect and being very keep on being a very open and fair and good. Society.
It's one of the most beautiful things about the Jungian, I think. And it's one of the things that attracted me to it, and
I'm sure
it attracts many other people to it.
Exactly. So this is a point that I always want to stress. And thank you so much for your time, and also taking the time to explain and taking us into it, at least for me, it was I've never been in contact or really gone deep into the Australian cultural situation and all the things that you were just pointing out. This was very interesting. And summing up, thank you so much for your time, also.
Pleasure.
For the pack. It's a true MVP, Champions League type of MVP, the major league MVP you were designing. So I can only encourage
Sounds like we might need to do some more.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to push you against. If it's a good cause and if it's a nice match, why limit it and really use the whole, if there's any momentum that I can get going with the podcast and to help those animals and the wildlife rescuers, it's all the power to it, right? So in these times, absolutely. And in this very, it's rough, I guess, talking about the coronavirus time.
Well, it's a bit messy, isn't it?
Yes. We should have a certain responsibility if we can afford it to at least structure our, some of the money onto the right institutions or the right people, talking about stuff like charities, stuff like animal health, stuff like also commercially, right? Small places, small bands supporting music venues, stuff like that. So yes, I don't know.
Yeah, support local.
That's very important thing, and also really support people who really needed, and also funds or charities that really can use the money. And this is an activity that was started by Tubig at Melbourne, as I understand, and also with you, Wasteland, helping the cause and designing the patch. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing, and we should really continue doing that. So everybody out there, I'll be messaging Jan about the new run of patches.
Bug him.
Or you put the or we can put it on eBay and bid on it, so eventually the cost is solved. So a 2,000 euro or Australian dollar a patch is auctioned off, and the money is given to the wildlife rescuers, which would have been a nice cause. Okay, Don Cactus, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for your work. Thanks for the insights. All the best to you. I hope to have you on the podcast soon. And please continue the good designs, continue the good work, and continue supporting all the good things that you are supporting.
Doing my best.
Right.
Thanks, man.
Take care, my buddy. So after this fairy tale MVP from Australia, I'll go way up north to Moscow, to Tubrig in Moscow, and took the chance to contact Vikaso Bagverko, who got the chance quite some time ago, but still, he got the chance to talk to a band that we all adore and for a certain song love, namely The Electric Six. And he followed my call, which I can only recommend and ask you guys for. He took his microphone, basically his mobile phone, and he went up backstage and talked to a band that's famous for in the Tube Union. They go by the name of Electric Six. So listen up and see what any Tubingen member of out there with a sense for making Tubingen radio can do. Enjoy that.
You can swear, you can do whatever you want.
Cool, man.
I think it's perfect. Okay, so...
And mark it 35 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, guys. Victor here from Turbojugend Moscow, and we're here in Moscow with Dave from the band you might know, Electric Six. Hi, Dave. And the first question is, can you please introduce yourself to the Turbojugend audience?
Yo, dudes. I'm Dave from Electric Six. And all you squares are in the dead zone.
All right, perfect. So how long you been playing with the band?
I started playing with the band off and on in the, like, May, I don't know, 2009, 2010. I became a permanent member of the band in 2012, maybe? I don't know. Hard to say. I was just kind of like, these are friends of mine, so I started filling in, doing tours with them and stuff, and then found that my time would be more usefully spent playing full-time guitar on stage right for Electric Six. Probably, yeah, 2012, 2013, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Perfect, thank you. So how and when you heard about the Turbo Negro?
I was a teenager, and I was reading Maximum Rock and Roll magazine, like piece of shit paper magazine, and Turbo Negro was the shit. Ass Cobra was the shit, and I went and saw them on the Scandinavian Leather Tour, maybe? The first time they ever came to Detroit. It was like the early 2000s, maybe, I don't know, 2004, something like that. And they became my favorite fucking band of all time because they are doing, yeah, they're doing the music exactly how it's supposed to be done.
Mm-hmm. So have you met the band and...
Yeah, I met the band, yeah. They played, I own a bar in, me and my wife and my business partner Mike and his wife Natalie all own a bar in Detroit, and Turbo Negro played there 2009, maybe 2010, back when Hank was still in the band. Met all the boys, met Happy Tom. It's nice to see a bunch of sailors on their way, but yeah, it's that was the only time that I ever met the band. When they played our gig, and then just this year, Hank came out on a solo tour, so I met him. I still haven't seen the band with Tony though. I've seen lots of clips. Tony's a handsome man, and he's a great front man, but I still haven't. I got to see the band with Tony.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't seen them on a punk rock bowling or something like that?
No, man. I'm always on the road for that shit. Like our band tours as much as any other band, so it's tough to make time to go see your favorite bands. Whenever I come home, like all the bands that I wanted to see have already played Detroit. And like when I'm home on my downtime, I have to like schedule time. Like I went to go see the Hives. I flew out to Denver and saw the Hives just because I missed them in, you know, anywhere near Detroit. I was already on tour, so yeah, it's difficult to when you tour as much as Electric Six does. It's difficult to see your favorite bands.
Speaking of the Hives, have you heard the last Turbo Negro record?
I believe so, right? What's the...
Rock and Roll Machine.
Rock and Roll Machine, yeah. It's fucking great.
Do you know that the one song was written by the guys from The Hive?
Yeah, they wrote it for Turbo Negro. Makes sense to me. I feel like those two bands should appreciate each other. They have a similar approach socially and musically. You know, The Hives obviously with a bit more of a garage rock approach, which, you know, we love in Detroit because goddamn White Stripes, man.
Yeah. And when or and how you heard about the Turbojugend?
Well, you can't hear Turbo Negro without hearing about Turbojugend. I think that Turbojugend was already in full effect. Because Turbo Negro has been a band since the 80s, right? Like late 80s, maybe 89 or something like that, 88?
Yeah, well, the official born is 1989.
Yeah, okay, so obviously there was not a Turbojugend in 1989.
Right.
And I was 8 years old then,
yeah.
So I didn't know about Turbojugend when I was 8 years old. But when I was 23 years old, I heard about the Turbojugend. Just, it's like a fan club. It's the Turbo Negro fan club, but it has become this massive thing, and it's a way to to identify people who might sort of have similar interests, and you can see the cut. What do you call it? The cut? Cut?
Cut.
What do you call it?
How do you pronounce
it? In Russia?
Yeah.
In Russia, we called it the same, like cut.
Cut?
Cut.
Cut, not cute.
Well, it's cute, coot.
Yeah, it's fucking cute to me, man. Sounds kind of cute. Yeah, right. So, you can see that shit across the room, and I've got a lot of respect for when I see some Turbo Negro fans, some Turbo Yugen at the Electric Six shows. I always make sure to identify them and like, yo, what's up? Give them a sailor's salute, and you know, if they ever want to like hang out afterward or whatever, I'm cool with that. I'm down for the cause, man. And I'm not really, I don't have my own cute. I don't have my own, but
or the jacket.
I don't have the jacket. I should get one, but I don't have it. I respect and appreciate it from afar, you know. I love the Turbo Jugend.
So did you actually became a Jugend, like officially, like...
Yeah, you can look me up on the website, but I don't have a jacket.
Yeah, that doesn't matter, pretty much.
If you look it up, I don't know, you can search me out. I'm in Hamtramck, and I'm Ayatollah Malarsh the Eighth.
So
that's my Jugend name, my warrior name, they call it, right?
So you're in the Denver chapter.
No, not the Denver chapter, man. I guess it's like a suburb of Detroit. It's Hamtramck, yeah.
Detroit. So what's the name of that? Once again,
Detroit or Hamtramck. I have to check the website because I signed up for it a long time ago.
All right.
Many, many years ago. Maybe close to a decade ago.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Thank you. So, how is this all the Drenching Blood covers was created and how it came about?
Electric Six had a fundraising thing raise money for a cover album, and each member of the band got to choose a song to cover, and I chose Drenched in Blood because it's probably one of the greatest Turbo Negro songs of all time. Hard to choose. How do you put all your babies up in a row and decide which one you prefer? That's a good one. I had to be done.
Have you heard about the story of the song? How it was written off the other song, like the band called Wild Hearts. Have you heard it?
No, I know who the Wild Hearts are, but no, I don't know that song. I never heard the story about that song being based on another song.
All right. So yeah, it's called. Just in Lust. So you have to check it out. It's a really nice song.
Yeah, shall do. Immediately. As soon as I get some good Wi-Fi. Get the fuck out of Moscow and get some Wi-Fi.
All right, so have you heard about a World Tour Jugend Tage in Hamburg? And maybe you consider performing there? It's like the gathering of the World Tour Jugends in August, or like first weekend of the August. So it's going on in St. Pauli, Hamburg, Germany. And have you heard about that event?
I have heard about this event, and if anybody invites Electric Six to come play this event, just throw a high enough dollar amount and we will be there.
Perfect. That concludes my next question. So, another question is, have you noticed any amount of crazy or like special activities of the guys in Kutis and Turbo Jugend guys when you play your one of the favorite or famous songs, Gay Bar?
Yeah, these boys like to they like to rip it up, but it's nice because they have a specific type of jacket that they wear. They don't like to take that off. So usually when we're in certain areas of Europe, people take their shirts off and then they're dancing around to Gay Bar without shirts. It is not in the interest of a Turbo Jugend member to take their shirts off because that means they have to also take their jacket off, which is something that they want to keep near them and keep on their person. So what I did notice is that usually when there is a significant Turbo Jugend faction of the crowd, they are keeping their shirts on during the song Gay Bar. And that's important to me, because I don't necessarily need to see that many nipples, man.
What about pants?
I dare any motherfucker to take their goddamn pants off during the song Gay Bar, and if you take your pants off, I would like to see you hold them high in the air.
Perfect. And what do you think about the popularity within the Turbo Jugend? Maybe it gave some more popularity of the song and the band in...
I think I understand what you're trying to ask me. If the Turbo Jugend is into like the song Gay Bar, like super cool, like I would love to be attached to anything that Turbo Negro has going for them and the Turbo Jugend. If you can sort of tag Electric Six in on some of that action, we'd like a little piece of that pie, man, because it's a very beautiful pie, and it seems so warm, and you want to like scoot up behind this pie and like maybe push it against your groin a little bit and just get a little piece of the action, man. As long as we can get a little piece of the action, that'd be so great to just like feel the action and like feel it coming into your body, and maybe you can touch it a little bit and smell it, and you can put your fingers inside of it and then smell the pie a little bit, and then you have access to some of the Turbo Jugend crowd and some of the Turbo Negro fans, and then Electric Six can be your favorite band too. That would be so nice.
Well, yeah, actually I got to say that a lot of people are telling me that the Turbo Jugend, that Electric Six is one of their favorite bands. There's a lot of going on. So, and just quick tips and any plans for the future?
Yeah, man, if you're listening to this and you're down with Electric Six, I'm totally, I'm just fucking around here and I'm having a good time. I'm the guy who plays stage right guitar. My name is Dave, and I play a gold Les Paul. And so if you see me on stage, just, you know that I'm a massive fan of Turbo Negro. Love those boys so much. Can't get enough of it. Love it. Fucking love it to death. And it's totally awesome. And please come out and see my band. Me and the rest of the guys in Electric Six are going to be coming to every fucking possible neighborhood we can come to in the next year or 2 years or five years, 7 years. Who knows? But yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much, Dave, and I wish you really good luck with the upcoming tour and the next shows.
So going back to the first part of the episode, going back to my connection to Australia, I'm also going back to the advice that the mighty audio slave Max Fartin gave me. We should stick more when doing our cream puff. We should stick more to Turbo Jugend bands. And this is exactly what I'll be doing. And I'm very proud and happy to present you guys a child of Turbo Jugend Melbourne and Turbo Jugend Wasteland. The band goes by the name of The Strip with double P, and it's a band out of Melbourne, of course, and they have a female front singer which I personally admire and like a lot, and Beck Taylor, and that's her real name. She is described as the love child of one Joan Jett and Lemmy from Motorhead. And it's a pretty powerful band, I have to say. It's a they have a pretty good sleazy, fast style. And they have a wonderful pace to their music. So, yeah, I don't know. I personally get off to music by listening to actual music. So this is the reason why I present to you The Strip from Melbourne, Australia. Enjoy that.